There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, boogity, boogity, boogity. Here we go. Midday Mobile on this Wednesday. Glad to have you along. A couple hours of live local talk. And if you want to be part of the show, a lot of ways to do it. Of course, you can use that talkback feature on the brand new FM Talk 106.5 app to leave us a message we can play back on the air. Or you can do the telephone thing, right? You can call us at 343-0106 or text us at that same number. Lots to do on today's show. Coming up at 12:35-ish, audio from today's press conference as the discussion of another bite at the I-10 Mobile River Bridge Apple is happening here with lower tolls, but still tolls part of the discussion. If you look at my Twitter feed, you'll see I found some gold in my desk from the old bridge argument and toll debacle. I have the some of the old no tolls stickers that are still in my desk. Who knew hanging on to those would come in handy? So I've got those. We'll probably put a high price on those and put them up for sale here shortly. But we'll talk about that in the second half of this hour. This half of the hour, talking to my buddy Cameron Smith, AL.com and the Triptych Foundation. And we did not talk about his latest opinion piece over at AL.com before now. We did spend the bulk of our time there during the news break discussing West German supergroup the Scorpions, and you brought up Winds of Change as like the second most popular Scorpions song.
Yeah, absolutely. Berlin Wall Falling, I mean, Wave the Candles, I mean, America, like, this is, the communists lost. Like, that was the theme song for that.
But it was a ballad, man. Awesome. It was like, I would rather see the Berlin Wall fall and hear Rock You Like a Hurricane, or No One Like You, you know?
Sure, I understand that, but I mean, like... I'm a lover, man, and so, like, Poison, like, Every Rose Has Its Thorn, like, hey, I know what the ladies like, and I did it at least once, because I got a woman to marry me, so, winning.
So, next time we have a conversation with your lovely wife, I'm going to ask if, how much Bret Michaels was part of y'all's courtship?
Yeah, Mr. Big, I'm the one
to no,
be
not
with
Mr.
you, whatever
no.
that one. I mean,
no.
Come on, man,
no.
Like, you got to bring it.
It's like the worst, man. It's the worst. Mr. Big, I hadn't thought about that in a long time. All right, so let's get on from this to some real contentious discussion out there and your latest opinion piece over at AL.com. People can check it out on the Twitter feed. I just retweeted it, plus people can just go the old-fashioned way to AL.com and look for Cameron Smith. But your headline here, to hold Biden accountable, prosecute Bannon and Meadows for contempt of Congress. Are you siding with this January 6th committee, completely partisan January 6th committee?
I'm siding with the institution of Congress because I think Republicans are being real short-sighted here. Like, do I think all this stuff is just really innocent politics where Democrats have to get to the bottom of what happened January 6th? No, I don't. But they are in the majority. And they're holding a hearing that they can very credibly argue is a legitimate inquiry into, hey, what happened that resulted in this attack on the Capitol? And the idea that Steve Bannon, who at the time was not an advisor to the president in an official capacity, can just thumb his nose at a subpoena. And now Mark Meadows is just saying, well, I mean, I wrote a book to talk about some of this stuff. But, you know, maybe I'm just not going to comply. Like, the idea that Republicans are okay with that sounds great right now because it plays well to be like, this is a witch hunt. Well, guess what? What about when Mo Brooks and other folks say, well, let's investigate Hunter Biden after the House takes back the majority in the midterm. And then Hunter Biden says, hey, remember when you let Steve Bannon thumb his nose at a congressional subpoena? Now I'm going to do that. Or when they say we want to oversee things in the Biden administration, and then all of a sudden everything is executive privilege and they can't get any information to do the job, they're going to regret it. And I think the congressional subpoena has to matter. Executive privilege has to matter. But if something's not covered by executive privilege and somebody's not incriminating themselves in a crime, Congress needs to be able to compel their testimony. And I think it's a big misstep to try to shield folks like Bannon from sitting down and talking to Congress, even if you think it is political.
Well, you could say there is a difference there, though, between Meadows and Bannon, right? Meadows' responsibilities as a member of that body may be higher than Steve Bannon's.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'd say that in the piece, that Steve Bannon is just a guy. And so you want him to be forced to testify and say, here's what I knew, because we want Congress, if they have a legislative purpose, and the Supreme Court said that, they've got to have a legitimate legislative purpose, but arguing, well, we want to know what led to the attack on the Capitol seems pretty legitimate in terms of meeting that threshold. But Mark Meadows, he absolutely can say, hey, I believe these things are covered by executive privilege, but a lot of the stuff that they're asking for apparently isn't. And so if it's not covered by executive privilege, you want those officials to testify, because that's the same standard we want for the Biden administration. That's, hey, if it's not covered by executive privilege, we need information about what's going on in government as it pertains to things Congress is interested in. And the idea that we're just going to indefinitely play this game where Congress needs information, the majority wants the information, but they can't get the information because congressional subpoenas don't mean anything. We got to get over that, because the institution still matters.
Do you think it's the initial question that frames all of this? Maybe it's the fruit of the poison tree there, that legitimate legislative purpose. Because pundits, on the right will argue there's not a legitimate legislative purpose to this. So therefore, they're not in the right for asking, for this information, these people to testify.
Yeah, well, that's not the standard. The standard is, is there a legitimate purpose that, you know, Congress can articulate? Not, do you as somebody who's subpoenaed feel like it's valid? That's not the standard. And so I understand the pundit class saying this, but that's what the minority says every time. Well, we don't like what the majority is investigating, so we don't want it. Well, okay, I get that, but that's not actually like a very good argument. The idea that, hey, the Capitol was attacked and we want to investigate the events leading up to that, that's where Congress does its business. It's pretty easy to see that is a legitimate purpose. Now, you can say, well, they're just being partisan hacks. They're trying to damage Trump. Well, let's flip the example to Hunter Biden. Okay, there's legitimate scandals about a president, or at the time a vice president, using his personal office for the private gain of his son. That's a legitimate purpose Congress has a vested interest in looking in. But don't tell me for a minute folks aren't looking for damaging information against President Biden when they're talking about investigating his son. And so that if that stuff comes out in the wash, that's fine. But articulating a legitimate purpose, it's a pretty easy threshold for Congress to meet. But Congress looks at a lot of things, and we want them to have good information. I get it. I'm in the political war of everybody against everybody all the time. But our institutions do have to matter, and Congress does need subpoena power.
Okay, I want to read a couple texts here, and then I've got a few more questions of my own. So this unnamed texter said, tried to play ball, but the Dems wanted more and more. This commission is totally political. It's not hard to see.
Well, Congress is political. I mean, when you have a majority, guess what? The majority does things the majority wants that the minority typically disagrees with. And that's not going to be any different when Republicans take the House back and they're in the majority. Democrats are going to be like, we don't want to investigate Hunter Biden. That seems embarrassing. That doesn't seem fun. Well, yeah, the same arguments that your texter is mentioning right now are what Democrats are going to say when Republicans are in the majority. My point is, there's got to be sort of a common ground understanding that this is how we're going to enforce these subpoenas. Otherwise, nobody ever gets anything, and it's hard for Congress to do its job.
All right, John says, Eric Holder, dude. I don't know if that's an interrogatory or a statement.
Part of the issue with contempt, and I'll speak to this, is when you hold somebody in contempt of Congress, you know, particularly for criminal contempt, then you refer it to the Department of Justice. Well, if the person you're holding in contempt is the Attorney General, then the likelihood that they're going to prosecute themselves seems kind of low. And so there's some, anytime you're depending on another branch of government, whether it's judiciary or executive, to enforce your subpoena, that's actually a challenge. But one of the things people don't know, because it hasn't been used since the 30s, is that Congress has what's called inherent contempt power. And so what it can do is say, you're in contempt of Congress. So, Steve Bannon, we're sending the Sergeant of Arms. He's going to arrest you and detain you until you stop obstructing our legislative work. And there does not have to be a judicial hearing. There does not have to be the DOJ involved at all. But, man, that's a pretty serious remedy to go get Steve Bannon and basically lock him up in the Capitol until he agrees to testify. But that's an option left to Congress.
All right. What Tim says on the text line here, read this, and then, because this is kind of goes into what you and I've talked about, not specifically on this subject, but in general over time. Tim says, so Cameron thinks the Democrats are going to follow the rules and play by the rules. It's not happening. The Dems don't like it when somebody starts playing by their rules. And I'll let you go, and then I'll insert my two cents.
Well, anarchy's fun, said no one ever. And I think the rule of law is really important, and the process is really important. And I'll even argue that what the Democrats are doing right now isn't outside the rule of the law or the political process. They do have the majority. They are issuing these subpoenas consistent with how the process normally works. And you don't have to like it, but to argue that Congress doesn't have a legitimate interest in investigating an attack on basically their office, that's insane. And so this whole Democrats play dirty, we play dirty, I'm never going to support that, because I think that that is how you spiral out of control as a society. And I think most of us realize that we can do the right thing the right way, and people will respond and rally around that. I don't think that that's weird.
Yeah, and that, just a short two cents, I agree with you on that. That's the thing on a broader sense, this whole idea that, well, the Democrats are doing this, so Republicans should be doing it too. I'm an old stick in the mud, and I still think somebody has to stand for the rule of law. You know, even though people say, well, it's not gonna work. You're going to sit there and, you know, crown yourself with laurels and lose every time. But I'm still a sucker for that. Terry says here, if the institution of Congress still matters, why aren't we prosecuting the Comeys and McCabes who lied to Congress?
Hey, and I think that those things are completely legitimate concerns. And this is a failing on the Department of Justice, because I will tell you that the Department of Justice has the criminal prosecuting power, like the ability to go after these people. Congress can't do that. But that's on the Department of Justice for saying, no, we're not going to take this seriously, and playing partisan politics with the prosecutions. And I think that's a big problem. And Trump exposed that and said, hey, whoa, this is a problem to have the law enforcement body playing politics. We should not do that. I agree with that. I think that's a huge concern. But again, in terms of what Congress does with its own subpoenas, I'm actually fine with them playing hardball and saying, hey, if you don't want to testify and you don't have legitimate legal cover, then we're going to detain you until you do.
David's,
and I know that's hardball, but I'm that way.
David's saying here that he's shocked that a lawyer like Cameron is whistling past the graveyard when it comes to the fact that the January 6th committee is violating their own rules and procedures and their own enabling legislation and trying to make his point, as is articulated by Mark Meadows' lawsuit against the committee.
Yeah, the challenge particularly, and most lawyers know this, that like particularly when it comes to issues in the political branches, the court often sort of defers and says this is a political question. How you enforce your own rules and handle this and do this stuff, that's up to you. The judicial branch rarely steps in and says you're violating your own political processes that you create. And in the House, majority rules, man. I mean, that's how the House has run for a very long time. And so, yeah, do I think that this is all sort of like this noble quest? No, but I'm not so short-sighted to think congressional subpoenas shouldn't work or be important. And there's a big difference between those two things.
To wrap it up here, I want to get your take. You didn't write about this specifically, but on the text messages here, you know, have you gotten to read any of these text messages?
I have not.
And the few that I've found out there, to me, it seems to show that there you had a whole, you know, there,
oh, you
there,
mean the text messages from the committee.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I should have, yeah, the text message from the committee. I mean, to me, it shows that,
yes,
that it was, people didn't want this to happen, right? These people that they're trying to say are the cabal that was bringing this January 6th riot to the Capitol, these people were shocked by it.
Well, if anybody that looks bad on it, it's Trump. Because these are people saying, stop it.
Right.
Come out more forcefully. This is not okay. That seems to me to be the right thing to say. And the fact people are like, well, these folks are culpable. I'm like, they're trying to get the president to shut this down and tell people to go home. And the president's delaying. That's on him. It's not on them. They were doing what they should have done.
Right, but this whole dragnet's, you know, always lays out this. Here's all the people in the meetings they had beforehand, and they were planning this thing. Heck, if Don Jr. didn't know this was going on, who would have known closer than Don Jr.? Come on. You know, I mean, they're acting like, I agree with you.
Yeah.
This reflects on Trump, but they're trying to say this whole cabal of conservatives behind Trump, I don't see it. These text messages prove it to not be true to me.
Well, the damning thing that came out recently was that PowerPoint. And there's still a lot of questions about the PowerPoint and this sort of like laid out plan to, you know, bounce the election on, particularly on grounds that we now know have been discredited. And even then it's, well, it was circulating, but who wrote it? Who was circulating it? I mean, there's still a lot of questions. And Democrats, their interest here is pretty transparent. They're just trying to throw mud wherever they can. And I'm interested on the legal side in terms of prosecutions. If there was a conspiracy, then, you know, that's RICO, man. We've got, mm-hmm, like federal statutes that cover that. And I hadn't heard of any actions being brought in terms of a conspiracy. But obviously Democrats would like to argue that. They like to make that the thing that everybody's talking about. Sure, people were talking, but the idea that they staged this, crafted this, and that there's proof of that, I mean, that is a federal crime. And, you know, that's what I'm interested in seeing, not the political, let me point out how you guys were bad actors and this thing backfired and you freaked out. Like, okay, I probably would have freaked out too if I was watching that. I did.
I think most Americans did. There he is, Cameron Smith, AL.com. People want to reach out to you, talk more about this or any of the other subjects you're writing about. How do they do it?
AL.com/opinion at D. Cameron Smith on Twitter. I try to be responsive when you guys reach out. Sometimes it takes me a little while, but I really want to know what you want to talk about.
Excellent, man. Looking forward to talking to you. Yeah, we get to talk next week, right? Yeah, because it won't be Christmas yet.
Absolutely.
I'll get to wish you a Merry Christmas at that point. All right. Talk to you soon. Coming right back, more Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, heads up, we got the audio from the presser last hour about the I-10 Mobile River Bridge Project Part 2, or you could say Part 3, 4, 5. Part 2, we'll just keep it that. We're going to get to that coming up after news. Right now, I want y'all to say hello to my buddy Larry Kirby at LCM Motor Cars, and sports cars are on the discussion palette here today.
Absolutely. With this weather, you got to have a convertible. So we got two of them, 2007 BMW 328i. We're really low miles, and it's under $11,000. And I got a 2010 Ford Mustang convertible with real low miles. And then we got a really sports car. It is a 2014 Subaru Impreza WRX STI. With all those initials, you know it's got to be bad.
All right. All those are on the lot, and people can check those out. Let's talk quickly about financing.
Finance is great. Like I said, we got credit unions doing as low as 1.75, and we got all different type of lenders to fit every person.
All right. So big inventory of vehicles, great options in financing. All we need is directions.
Highway 90 and Plantation Road, online at lcmmotorcars.com. Please like us on Facebook or just call us at 375-0068.
Thanks, Larry.
Thanks.
Larry Kirby checking in from LCM Motor Cars. Talk about the sports car thing. I've just not ever been a Mustang fan. I've not been, I mean, I don't hate them, but it's not my thing. No sports cars are my thing. I've driven nothing but trucks my whole life. But the ones a couple years ago, I think I went back and forth with folks. I liked that Camaro when it came out, what the kind of the redesign. I liked it. And have you seen, I've passed like two of them over the weekend. The new, I guess that's the new Corvette design. Y'all seen that? I'm still not going to get one because you can't, it doesn't have a truck bed and it's right on the ground and you can't get them in four-wheel drive. But I can look at them and appreciate them. They look pretty tough. That new Corvette looked like a, does it, I mean, am I wrong in saying it kind of looks Ferrari-esque or less of the classic Corvette lines? And, or maybe there's another sports car it looks more like. I don't know. It's not, but I check those out. It's no truck. It's no Jeep. It's nothing like that. But for people that, you know, you're into that kind of stuff, they got those in stock as well. All right. Coming up, we'll get the audio from the presser that happened. And then, of course, a lot to talk about as MPOs on both sides of the bay have said, let's talk about this again. The I-10 Mobile River Bridge project with tolls, but would they be less tolls? Right. Lower amount. We'll get the details. We'll get the facts of this. And then we'll ring the bell and let the cage match begin. It's Midday Mobile, FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Oh, it sounds so fine. Jimmy on guitar. By the way, too, Dalton, if you didn't know, and Jeff left so quickly, I didn't have time to tell him, but if he's listened, so Jeff, as you've added more, because the back and forth, the different sounds of the bumper music for the different shows, you know, Jeff has added some more, he's got some classic country in there, and then some, I got not classic country in the mix and all that, and I know he's got a big fan base for that, so the way I deal with his fan base for that is I add more and more Led Zeppelin into the mix every time he does that, so... There we go. Well, it's a balancing thing. The more he does that, the more Led Zeppelin, the more Guns N' Roses, the more AC/DC I put into the mix for bump music, and it's fair. We balance each other out. All right. 12:36, and time to get some audio here from last hour, a press conference about this next I-10 Bayway solution, right? I got this. This email came in from, Eastern Shore MPO and the Mobile MPO. All right. And it says this, and then we'll get the audio. The Eastern Shore and Mobile Metropolitan Planning Organizations are giving the Alabama Department of Transportation a list of unanimously supported requirements, including the guarantee of no toll options needed for a new Mobile River Bridge and Bayway. In the absence of MPO approval within the next few months, the project is at risk of losing $125 million in federal funding secured by U.S. Senator Richard Shelby. Loss of federal funding would make the completion of the project in the future more difficult and expensive to local citizens. Now, we've talked about this $125 million many times on this show and on this radio station, and it has this shelf life, right? You kind of use it or lose it. I think that's what had brought in the whole discussion about the truck-only bridge and all that, because they're trying to find a way to use that $125 million before it is lost. So we'll get into some of the details here with the press conference. I think in this press conference, you hear from Mobile Mayor Sandy Stimson, also Fairhope City Councilman Jack Burrell, and possibly others. The audio is as good as we can get it. Once again, my war against bad audio continues at a state level, a municipal level. I'll volunteer my time to come help y'all mic things up a little better in the future, but let's roll with that. So here it is. This is the press conference from last hour.
Well, good morning. I certainly appreciate you being here this morning. Unbeknown to most citizens in Mobile and Baldwin County, they got an early Christmas present. And you say, well, I don't remember getting anything, and I didn't see anything. Well, what happened in the last hour and a half is that the two MPOs have met, the Metropolitan Planning Organization in Baldwin County and one in Mobile County, and unanimously agreed to move the process forward on the bridge. And so that is, in my opinion, a great gift for the two counties. And if you, over the holidays, are driving across the Bayway or the Causeway and you're caught up in congestion, just know that we are moving this process forward so that we can solve the congestion problem. And it will be a shorter time frame than the 20. 25 years that's been most recently talked about. You know, a major development today, and as I said, it's critically important what we just did with the two MPOs to take this vote to move the process forward. And so some of the new points that we want to talk about are, is that we have narrowed down a specific, hold on 1 second.
Somebody else speaking.
Evidently the word is getting out that the MPOs have met.
I wasn't in the region to talk to
you. I'd have jumped if you had. But you know, this is, as you can tell, we're excited about the meetings that we just had. But in moving this forward, it was crucial that we do this at this time so that we can send a message to the Department of Transportation in Washington, D.C., that we concur on a plan that we're going to give to ALDOT to work out the details of as we move forward. So we have defined what we think the toll should be, but the most important thing to many of our citizens is there will be no-toll options. And there are actually three no-toll options. And those are if you travel the Africatown Bridge, Causeway, if you travel the Bankhead Tunnel, Causeway, or the Wallace Tunnel, Causeway, those will all remain free routes. And so just to help me in touching on some of the other points, in just a moment I'm going to call on Commissioner Connie Hudson, who is the vice chair of the Mobile MPO, and then on Jack Burrell, city councilman, president city councilor in Fairhope, and he is the chairman of the Eastern Shore MPO, to make a few remarks. But another driving point in this was that as we approached the three-phased bridge, it was going to take 25 years to do it, and everybody really recognized that that just was a non-starter after they really thought through that. And another thing is that we could not afford to do nothing because we would lose the $125 million infra grant that we received a couple of years ago. So thought is that by the votes that have been taken today, the conversations that will be had between ALDOT, our United States congressmen and senators, and the DOT, that they'll recognize that we are serious about moving this project forward. So at this time, I'd call on Commissioner Connie Hudson to make a few remarks.
Good morning, everyone. I think we believe that today marks a major milestone in the forward progression and the progress for the I-10 Mobile River Bridge and Bayway. It's important because it reflects a consensus, not only a consensus among the two organizations, and by the way, the votes today taken by both organizations were unanimous. But they reflect the points of consensus that we've had a lot of input on from the community for years, really, but primarily in the last couple of years when the first plan was introduced, and we received a lot of input, we received a lot of communications, concerns, and I think all of that together, taken together, and we listened. The community, we listened to the community, we listened to all of the groups that have been involved, and I think today the points that have been brought forward that are a part of a letter that will be signed by both chairmen reflecting the views of the MPOs that will go to ALDOT, I think that it brought us to a point as a community where we have truly reached a consensus on this, and I think the outcome, it hasn't been an easy process, and we've certainly had our challenges along the way, but I think the outcome, what we see today, is so much better in terms of the product, in terms of moving this project forward. So I'm very pleased. I'm excited. I think that, and I want to thank everybody who has been involved, not only the elected officials that are a part of our metropolitan planning organizations, but the community at large, the Build a Bridge Coalition, and everybody who has played a role in helping us get to this point, because this is absolutely necessary that we do this now and move forward and get this bridge built and relieve this congestion. And with that, I will call on our friend who is the chairman of the Eastern Shore MPO, Chairman Jack Burrell.
Thank you, Commissioner Hudson. I want to thank the members of the press, the dignitaries that are here today. It is truly a historic and a happy day for the region, and not only for the region, but also for the nation, because, you know, I-10 connects everything between Los Angeles, California, and Jacksonville, Florida. So we don't believe that the bridge is only important for this region, but we should rejoice in it as a nation today. So big news today. I want to thank Mayor Stimson, Commissioner Hudson, and the entire Mobile NPO, and also want to thank the members of the Eastern Shore NPO for establishing this framework that we adopted today. This is just one step of many, but it's a very, very important step because we've listened to the citizens to come up with the framework that our citizens want. And I also want to thank ALDOT for listening. I believe that they have heard us and heard our desires and our needs of our citizens. So if you don't mind, I have some prepared remarks that I would like to make. First of all, I think that once again, I have to know what the mayor said. This is a very, very strong framework that meets all of our local needs and allows us to move forward with the project so that money is not jeopardized. The money that's already been earmarked for this program. It is imperative that we move forward to secure this federal funding. At the same time, it's very important to note that we will continue to seek additional federal funding and state funding. So we're not going to just stop with the $250 million commitment from the state and the $125 million grant from the federal government. But as we move forward, we'll have an effort in parallel to seek additional funding. For Baldwin County in particular, I want to stress three things. First, this framework means that we will see a new bayway and interchanges within 5 years, as Commissioner Hudson pointed out, not 25 years down the line as it was with the previous plan. Second, the Causeway, the Wallace Tunnel, the Bankhead Tunnel, and the Africatown Bridge will remain a free option. Third, the state of Alabama and the federal government are making substantial contributions to this project. As I mentioned earlier, we expect the state to contribute $250 million, and we expect to use all of the $125 million that Senator Shelby has secured for us. That said, it's not enough money for the project. So we're making sure that if you choose to pay a toll and take the new bayway, your money goes towards paying for this project. Tolls will be temporary, and any additional funding we are able to secure will go towards paying down the debt and or decreasing the toll duration. Finally, I want to emphasize that this is only the first step in the process. We'll continue working with ALDOT, and there will be ample opportunities for public input.
All right, there you go. So there is the press conference that happened last hour with the discussion. One of the, key takeaways here, and we'll talk about that when we get back from the news, but this, what I thought was the poison pill to this whole thing. Remember back in, I guess that was 2019? Remember, it was January, I think, of 2019, and here on this very radio show, I was talking to ALDOT engineers, and they said, well, necessarily, we will have to toll the Wallace Tunnel. Remember that? Because of the leaky nature of, I think that was the term they used. So that is addressed in what they're talking about now, this project, all kind of based off not losing this infra grant, $125 million in the mix. When we come back, I'll take your calls at 343-0106. A lot to talk about here. It's like we're playing this record again. I-10 Mobile River Bridge Project. What do you think? Be right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, that was perfectly timed. It just came up out of the rotator there. Come back into the segment of Midday Mobile. Mariner says, Sean, you're my favorite newsman, but you're going to lose that bumper music battle. I'm going to win. Rock and roll win. It's, the thing that's probably irritating is I like so many kinds of music. I kind of could put a lot of country on here, too. But Jeff did that, so, I stick with my rock and roll world on that. Tons of text on this, and we're going to get into your messages here on the I-10 Mobile River Bridge Project. Also want to grab a phone call here. And let me just quickly read this. So This is the breakdown here. Breakdown, maybe that's not the right term. Great song by Tom Petty, though. All right, first, we believe, this is from the MPO. Okay, this is their press release that came out here just right after the presser. Said, first, we believe a long-term comprehensive solution should happen now instead of a piecemeal phased-in approach that will take 25 years to complete. The traffic congestion in our area will only get worse if we wait or do nothing. Second, we believe that both state and federal governments should contribute significant funding to any solution. In addition, we expect the state to contribute at least $250 million to this project, which would make it one of the largest state projects ever. We expect $125 million in federal funds will be completely expended on this project, and we expect all efforts will be made to maximize additional federal funding. Third, any final plan that must include no toll, any final plan must include no toll options for passenger vehicles. We dislike tolls and strongly prefer the project be built without them, but existing funding sources are not sufficient to build the comprehensive solution to our area needs. Our citizens must always have a choice to use free, no toll options. And fourth, any toll considered should not exceed $2.50 for passenger vehicle. Toll should only be levied on new infrastructure, and toll revenue must pay down project debt. Tolling should end when the original debt is paid, and any new federal or state funding should be used to pay down the project debt in order to reduce tolling costs or duration. Revenue from this project should be used to pay for this project, no other purpose. And fifth, this must be a publicly owned project. No foreign or domestic corporation should own the infrastructure within these parameters we support. And it goes through that, and we'll talk about that. All right. To the phones, which, by the way, phone number 343-0106 if you're new to town. Welcome. And welcome, David, in Mobile. Hey, David.
Sean, when former country DJ Dan Brennan and Jeff Poor figure out they can team up against your rock and roll, they're going to wipe the floor with rock and roll.
Two decades of rock and roll radio, my friend. I feared nothing.
So before I get into my comments, I got a question for you. Who do you think has won the battle with today's vote? Governor Ivey or the never tollers like Jim Ziegler and Dr. Lou?
I think neither, because this is what I thought the poison pill was, and Lord knows we talked about this for over a year, was the tolling on existing infrastructure. Honest to goodness, if there's, you're not going to toll the, you know, if you have toll-free routes, then at least we have like a maybe a middle ground, right? Some kind of compromise.
There's a fifth requirement I would like to see added to this letter that obviously they didn't ask me before they drafted the letter, and that is there needs to be an unlimited monthly pass option for local users like myself who use the Bayway four or five times a day to cross back and forth because it's a part of our job.
I think they can do that. Remember our discussions where they can't do, and people said, well, get a thing that gives you, you know, free access if you live in Mobile and Baldwin counties. But remember, we looked through that. In federal code, you couldn't do that. But you can offer what you're saying, I think. I think legally you can offer this discount for higher use.
As long as you offer it to everybody, you can offer it.
Yeah.
But and then furthermore, we also need to ensure that we don't push the backup further east on the bridge by dealing with the congestion at the mid-bay exit where the causeway crosses the bayway. Personally, I would like to see them do away with that interchange, but I know that Ed's Seafood Shed and all the restaurants on the causeway would raise holy heck about that. So maybe some traffic control arms that could control traffic flow during peak times to keep people from getting on and off to avoid those backups on the bayway of people getting over from the causeway.
All right, David, appreciate your call. Although I like, you know, I'm a midway fan. I call that the Chocolata Boat Ramp exit. I know that's not what Aldot calls it, but I don't think I'm the only one that, you know, say, what exit? Oh, right there by Chocolata Boat Ramp. All right. So many texts, and we're not going to get all these in before the news, but we'll come back and we will. And we'll get to your phone calls at 343-0106. All right. So let's do this chronologically. What has come in here? Anderson in Foley says, how many interstate systems have toll bridges? Just curious. Anderson, I don't know about toll bridges, but toll zones, a couple of years ago when we were doing this, there were several that did, because I hadn't seen them either. I had the same reaction, but back then we dug into this, and there were some areas in the Northeast and maybe somewhere near Chicago. So Sean says, so I might be able to physically, so I might still be physically able to drive myself by the time they build the fantasy bridge. Yeah, Sean, you remember I said that 10 years ago in this discussion, not this latest, but when we were talking about the bridge, I said, will I be able to physically drive my vehicle by the time a bridge project would be completed? You heard in that presser, and this, I'm just telling you what they said, that this is going to be more like a 5-year versus a 25-year thing if you did it piecemeal. Swoosh. No tolls. If nothing, Alabama get over $3 billion in infrastructure upgrades, why do we have to pay the tolls? Okay. Swoosh, that there's a little complex to it, and it may not answer exactly what you're asking, but I know talking about this with then-Congressman Byrne and now Congressman Carl about this, they can't, because of the way the laws were changed in Washington, they can't dedicate the money specifically for a project. Now, how shall we get the things done that through InfraGrant? But they can allocate money, and that money then goes to a state to be distributed through whatever that state agency is for that kind of funding. In this case, it would be ALDOT for roads. So I know that's a kind of a roadblock to some of that. So Terry says, so whatever happened to the these folks like themselves hearing themselves talk. Yeah, well, they're politicos. Tim says, I'll believe it. I believe it's all going to happen when they start driving pilings. No, that'd be a good sign. Hey, Greg said, can you give a recap of the presser? Yeah, we'll come back. We'll talk more about this. 343-0106. What do you think? We're back to a discussion of the I-10 Mobile River Bridge. Is this the right one? Is this the way we should go? With some limited tolling, but toll-free options?